This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. Today I'm recording episode 160, I believe, of our channel, the Young Channel, 2.5 years old. And we've been recording these podcasts on a regular basis now. I used to record them once a week. Now we're recording like 10 a week almost. Really appreciate everybody listening in and making us your favorite podcast from a conversational podcast globally. We ranked top 5 in a conversational category of podcast. We don't promote any products here. We don't promote vitamins or hair growth or anything like that. We just focus on the conversation and have a good conversation with our guests. Get to know them, get to know their products and services that they're offering. And hopefully it helps somebody out there. Today, I have the honor and a distinct pleasure to have with me Leah Nurik. Leah joins me today to talk about Brandy AI. It's a platform. We were just talking about it earlier. But before we dig into all this and let Leah introduce herself, I've got one question for Leah, which normally everybody gets on the channel here. We start with, and just to consider it an icebreaker, if you want, it is the story. So everybody's got a story. So Leah, what's your story? What got you here?
I've been in B2B SaaS business as a product marketer and product management person in that space for my entire career. And I ran an agency for 14 years. And with the advent of AI and AI search shifting kind of the paradigm of how people are finding products and services in B2C and B2B, started getting a lot of questions around, okay, how is my performance marketing, how is my PR, how are my content things actually affecting how I'm positioned in AI? So we tried to solve that problem. And then all of a sudden, we realized there was a huge market opportunity to help impact marketing organizations and brands, global brands as well. And so we built this product. So it's been a journey of having, you know, a lot of experience in software marketing, but also in marketing in general. And so now we've built this product that is impacting the evolution of discovery and consumer discovery in markets around the world. And so it's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, where are you from?
I grew up in New Hampshire.
And is that where you are right now? Or
no, I live in Washington, D.C. now, right outside. I got out of the tundra, but I do go up occasionally. I escaped the tundra, but I do head up there to visit my family.
I've referred that way before.
It's cold. It's cold. It's cold. And actually, we're getting a huge snowstorm here in DC, supposedly, and everybody's freaking out. And they're like, oh, my God, there's going to be 12 inches of snow. And I was talking to somebody. And I said, yeah, you know, it's crazy. People are freaking out. And I used to walk to school in, you know, 12 plus inches of snow with my hair wet and didn't even blink an eye. So, but yes, it's very cold. I escaped the tundra, but I do like to go up and strap on my sticks, you know, on the mountain and ski down and visit my parents. So that's good.
So going back to Brandy AI, just walk me through that infliction. You know, I know we all have opportunities and we see the window of opportunity in various things. It depends on the industry you're in. What was this strategic inflection moment that, you know, put you in that transition phase? I gotta do this.
That's a great question. I think what it was that there was an opportunity that I saw when I was talking to all these brands to participate in a historical moment of the evolution of the next evolution of technology. So my career, I've seen, you know, the advent. I was young, got out of college, and my first job, I worked for a PR tech PR firm during like the dot-com bubble. And so I've seen the web, and then I worked in mobility when mobile was just a thing. I worked for Motorola and a variety of mobile software companies when we were still trying to figure out how it was going to impact the human experience and the business experience. And then I just saw that this was the next thing. And I thought that, you know, I had me and the team that we brought together had so much experience in the domains that they owned. Like we have like ad tech leaders, engineering leaders from ad tech who had been through building, you know, multiple successful software companies. And it was exciting because I felt like I could use my domain expertise and my experience and actually play a role in what this looked like for the next stage of how brands would connect with customers. And I've just always been somebody who's relatively intellectually curious and enjoys a challenge and enjoys learning about new things. So it kind of fit all of the things that get me jazzed. So I think that's kind of what it was.
Leah, for the audience and for those who are first time hearing about this, what is Brandy AI?
We are what you'd call a GEO platform. So generative engine optimization platform. So we help brands figure out how they come up in AI-driven searches across all the different models like ChatGPT, Google AI Overview, Google AI Mode, Perplexity, Copilot, etc. But not just how often they get mentioned in the answers, but then it provides directional guidance on what you can do to improve your performance so you can reach your customers in this new information discovery paradigm, which is, you know, a condensed funnel. In a condensed buyer journey, all kind of within an AI chat. Or even if you're not a user of an AI type of chat model, now we do know, right, that if you go onto Google, you're going to get those AI overviews, you know, 85% of the time. So those AI overviews are also driven by the same technical and human intent type of algorithms that will pull, summarize, and such. So it can't be escaped. AI is not just a flash in the pan. And so Brandy helps brands listen to what the pain points are of their customers and measure how they're doing, and then helps them improve their performance, as well as it can be used by product marketing to identify what product types, features make the best type of products. So it can be used across the whole marketing organization, and it is by a variety of Fortune 500 brands today.
So if I was to dumb it down a little bit for the audience who are not necessarily technical or familiar with this type of technologies out there, is this similar to an SEO in Google, let's say, ranking? Is that how should probably think about it that way? And, you know, what you're proposing is, it sounds like teaching AI what to do if search in brand A comes up.
Yes, that's basically what it is. And then it also helps brands to identify what consumers or B2B buyers want out of their products so that they can use that in a product feedback loop, and they can see how they're perceived through like sentiment analysis, what features are they lacking that people want, all that kind of stuff too.
So just me being naive, I guess, on this topic a little bit, would there be a room there for products to misrepresent themselves in this case? And how do you sanitize that information?
So for products to misrepresent themselves, I guess, you know, you could do that. You shouldn't do that because you will get called out. So for example, we do know that the AI pulls from multiple different locations. So it's not just your own owned content, where I suppose if you were disingenuous and not a mission-oriented brand, you could have disingenuous information posted on your website. But I think we all know that what happens with that is it eventually gets called out. But the AI doesn't only rely on your own content. It also relies on earned media, which is highly elevated in an authoritative as an authoritative source in AI search results and citations. We also know that the AI tends to make certain social media sites like Reddit and Quora, as well as peer review sites, consumer reports and things like that based upon different markets, as well as NPOs and nonprofits. So Phil, if you're in an Advil instance, you're probably going to see a lot of stuff pulling from like .orgs around arthritis, or from Mayo Clinic, or from NIH and that kind of thing too. So just like back in the day when there were a whole bunch of naughty bad practices around SEO, the Google and the models in general will be able to determine disingenuous use of anybody who's trying to trick the algorithm into doing it. And we've all heard horror stories about how Google will change an algorithm and then like websites will just drop off until they, you know, rectify what it is they're doing. I think that there is kind of built-in validation in the way that the AI reads and summarizes information and how it utilizes credible sources in order to determine and confirm the information that it's getting from your own website.
You know, the one thing that is just, it's sort of like when you were talking about this, it just comes to mind is I, you know, you've been doing this, talking to various people for many years now. as you have. And there's something out there called, you know, there are people selling, let's say, 5-star reviews on, you know, I'll get you 5-star reviews for your small business on Google. Are we going to get into a point where that could be the case for AI in this case? Can that be replicated in AI? I'm just trying to be the devil's advocate in this case, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, so review sites, for example, you know, if you're, there's always going to be somebody trying to swindle the conversation, right? But I think that part of it is that right now people tend to trust the answers that they get out of AI. But as consumers evolve and they become more educated about kind of what they're getting, they're going to trust but verify, right? And we all have to do that in all of our experiences. And then maybe it'll be verify and then trust, right? Like, I think that with a lot of Google search results, people got to a point where they're like, okay, well, you know, why is this coffee shop coming up first? And it's like a sponsored post, you know, it's a sponsored, it's like an ad, but, you know, but you're not seeing the one that's around the corner from you that you know is there. And so people tended to distrust and know that what the information they were getting was not necessarily indicative of reality or their own desires. So we all have to, you know, just, you have to go through your life and with a certain degree of not cynicism, but doubt, right? You don't take everything at face value. AI search results are the same, right? So you go on and somebody's, how many times have you had a friend of yours tell you, oh, I asked chat about this back pain that I have, or like, you know, what's wrong with my gut? And you're like, okay, ChatGPT told you that, but you should verify it, click around and do your own research.
Right. Now, from a geo versus SEO perspective, can you speak to the point where legacy frameworks for SEO aren't sufficient anymore? And I think that's what the reason Brandy AI exists is, because SEO is not sufficient anymore. You need something to deal with the new tech that they're out there or they're upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't we satisfied anymore with the SEO? Is it noise?
No, it's not noise. It's just that the way that people talk to search engine was like keyword driven. The search algorithms were built around keywords, not user intent. Mm-hmm. Right. So you might have put, you know, best mouse of 2026, you know, for like, okay, what mouse? Where now usually the intent would be more focused around, I have carpal tunnel, what mice or mouses? I don't know if it's like one of those mices or mouses, kind of deer, you know, whatever. Let's talk about pens instead. Pens.
That's
no.
Right, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have carpal tunnel. And I have carpal tunnel, and I like to write when I'm in bed or on the couch under the covers. So I need it to write at an angle, and I have carpal tunnel, right? So it's more intent-based search than it is best pen, right? So that is a different algorithm. And so if you're optimizing your website or the content that you put out, it's not only on your website, like if you're doing syndicated content of some kind, or you're looking to position yourself effectively around certain brand pillars, like, okay, I believe the perfect pen is a pen that is made out of sustainable materials. It writes upside down, is good for, it doesn't hurt your wrist or doesn't give you calluses on your fingers, right? It automatically refills its ink well, something like that, you know, like how I define a pen, I would then need to optimize around the user intent, around the definition of what a pen is, so that I can position my company effectively and come back as a recommended pen.
So is this the type of problem Brandy AI solves?
Yeah. Yeah. So what we do is, it kind of starts with identifying what are the most likely prompts that people are searching for. And as marketers, sometimes we can get into these assumption loops where you assume you know what people care about with a pen or a mouse. And so it's really, you know, and I've been down that road so many times in my career of that kind of assumption loop in like either product marketing or messaging and positioning. And so it was so important for us that when we built the product, to build out a way that you could bracket out as much of your bias as possible, so that it can confirm what you know, what you think you know about your market, about your competitors, about what people care about about pens, but it can also surface new opportunities. So you might not have thought of a different persona, of a persona that you're selling to, and Brandy can identify that, and you can help monitor, and then you can monitor with that. So we kind of start there with what are the most likely questions that are driven by emotional triggers and things like that. And all of that is a very deep intelligence layer. And then we monitor it. And then we help them figure out what type of content and what type of programs, whether they're through earned media or syndicated content or through content optimization on their own website and technical structure, what they need to do to improve their performance so they can reach customers in that buyer journey.
Now, you know, like early adopters and people who are jumping on board with your technology, Leah, they're early adopters, I guess, in this case. You have a few customers, I'm assuming. The platform is running.
I'd say we have more than a few. Yeah. We have, you know, upwards, you know, in the double and triple digits of customers and users.
And how do people
that are
become a customer, Leah? How do they become a customer? Is it subscription based? Did they contact somebody? How did that work?
Well, you can just go to the website. It's mybrandy.ai, and then you request a demo and you just kind of go through the process. But it is a subscription-based service. There's no professional services involved. It's a software platform.
I was going to ask you that earlier. That's a change for you because throughout your career, you were like advising customers what to do, and now you productized that. So,
yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I love it.
You
it's
like
so product? Awesome.
You like being product, like have a something.
Yeah,
like
it's so, you know, my career started and I was in marketing, but I was in product. So I spent years doing product marketing and branding and messaging and working for software companies. And then I worked for Motorola, which is a hardware company, but I worked with software companies that were partners of Motorola. I've always been a product person, I guess. I love product. So, and I love seeing the impact of building product in mass scale and volume and adoption, and what does that customer experience look like? And then hearing all the feedback and collaboration from our customers, and how in an early space like this, you know, I mean, it's an early disruptive market, and so collaborating with these, you know, big companies and mid-sized companies to hear how are they using the product, what would be more beneficial for them, how is it changing their workflow in this new era? It's so awesome. I love it. It's like so excited for the first time in a long, I mean, I loved what I did at the agency, but I'm just like kind of re-excited, regenerated in this new thing I'm doing.
You're like the phoenix, re-rise again.
I wasn't down that far. Yeah, but yeah. No ashes here, Robin. There's no ashes, okay? Come on.
Excellent. No ashes. Good. I love that. The idea of interplay between human and the human creativity, actually, and the algorithmic discoverability, if I can call it that way.
I love it. Yeah.
What is the interplay between these two?
So I have a very strong.
Is there one?
I think so. I have a very strong point of view on this. I believe in the value of human-driven content. I believe that human creativity and content is critical to producing not just content, but media and collaboration and conversations that are meaningful and actually improve people's lives. So when we were talking before about misrepresentation, like brand misrepresentation, and if you know, you've got like, you know, those bad players out there that want to trick the AI, and they just want to use AI driven content to try to, you know, trick the algorithm. That's not where the bucket that we fall in or that I fall in at all. And I think I'm kind of opposite of that. So what we've done here with Brandy is actually elevate the human creative process to on par with AI. So you can see the importance of the human creative process in creating not only great content that is discoverable, readable, and summarizable, and that's authentic and credible, but to do that, but then it's now more efficient because so where AI and optimization becomes just an efficiency factor in order to help them produce more impactful content, but not written or generated by AI.
Which is ultimately you need, you know, like on my level, like I feel like creativity has increased quite a bit when you combine human plus technology such as AI, and it allows for a lot more deeper thoughts, I feel, or deeper creativity. You know, if it cuts down the time of coming up with these ideas. I just love that. I was just on a call earlier and I would compare it to an army of one now. You know, what used to take me, let's say, a week to produce, now will take me like, you know, an hour or two, and I'd probably produce the same thing as long as I stay in contact of what I'm creating and not put it on autopilot like some lazy people would do, just to press the easy button, and all of a sudden hell breaks loose because you produced the wrong content. or misrepresented yourself in some cases.
Yeah, yeah. And you're not producing valuable mission-driven content that you actually care about. You're only, you know, people that are just focused on, you know, one tactical solution or goal versus like, what is the context of what I'm doing? How is it going to not only impact AI search results, but how is it going to impact the mission of my company of producing these products? How I engage with my customers in an authentic, credible way, which we all know that companies that have higher trust have higher retention and multiple purchases over time, and they have those increases in customer loyalty. And this is no different. So, and the only way to do that really is to utilize the creativity of the people you have and then make them more efficient and optimized with the use of technology. So I think you and I are, you know, on the same wavelength on that one.
Absolutely. Now, in your experience, what are you seeing out there? Are companies treating this strategically, or is adoption still tactical or checkboxes?
So we're definitely not at checkbox, because I feel like checkbox comes when it becomes completely operationalized. So we're still in that strategic growth phase with people trying to determine what does this new paradigm mean? So it's kind of like, it's like the web 1.0. Where we're at with this. So everybody knows that this will at some point be operationalized. And so then it will become more of a checkbox of what I need to do. Of course, you know, for any company too, the differentiation you provide enables it to not be commoditized, but you provide a strategic overlay, which is where what Brandy does. So even when it does become operationalized in checkbox, I think we do have a very rich value, rich and deep type of enterprise-y product that's quite complete. However, where we are at right now is that we're partnering with brands and companies that are exploring and know they need to do something, and they think they know what they need to do. I think by the time you get to the end of Q2, you're going to see a very rapid operationalization of GEO. And by the end of the year, it will be kind of standard of something you have to do, because it's all changing very quickly. And it's those companies that act now that can seize a real great opportunity. But that being said, to be honest with you, what we do know is about that the LLMs tend to pull on the most recent and credible content. So they want credible, authoritative, but they want recent, because the world changes so fast. So if you do it now, you're going to probably leapfrog your competitors. But if you stop doing it, it's not like SEO where kind of, okay, I got the number one keyword for ergonomically created pen, right? And then you can just kind of maintain that. If you don't keep feeding content and having credible, authoritative stuff out there, as well as like media, earned media, then you will lose your place. So it's a complete change in the way that people were looking at their organic type of discovery initiatives.
Very helpful, because a lot of our audience are wondering about that too. So I'm one of them, and I'm learning a lot now from this conversation, because I always thought about geo, but I never really had a chance to actually explore it. Well, thanks for helping me and helping the audience in discovering this a little bit better. The product strategy that you went through from a go-to-market kind of thing, what was the hardest product decision you faced building Brandy versus running an agency?
Well, they're completely different, right? One's a services company, that the scale on something like that and the growth percentage of running a service, like year over year growth, is going to inherently be less, right? Just because of scale, versus this business, it's growing very quickly. So it's very, very different, but it's great because you can scale it. You can scale it faster because it's product versus services. So I would say that, but you asked me, what was the toughest decision that I've had to make?
Yeah, in building the product, yeah.
In building the product. I would say, so what's interesting is what we were just talking about the human versus the AI generated type stuff, right? I myself came from a place, I mean, I'm creative by trade. So I've always felt very strongly about the power of creative thinking, as well as collaborative and intellectual idea development and design level thinking. So I wouldn't say it was a hard decision for me, but I would say that there were a lot of people who were pushing when you would have conversations early on, not within our company, but with partners and customers around trying to build in AI generated content. And I think if we only cared about trying to close, right? And we only cared about thinking that we just wanted to make a buck versus being mission driven into creating an impactful product, then maybe we would have chosen that. But I wouldn't say it was a hard decision, but I will say that maybe the pressure of a decision on that, to know in your heart with your team that the approach you're taking that protects the creative and elevates the thinking of human, not just protects, because it's not just about protecting, but it's an appreciation of the value of human thought that went into the product. You know, just like any company or any entrepreneur is trying to build something, you will face ethical issues. And you will have pushback against what it is that you think is the right thing when other people would say no. And sticking to your mission and what you know in your soul is the right thing. You know, some people struggle with that. I think I've been down that road because I ran a business for 14 years. So I guess I would say that. I don't know if that's answered your question.
Yeah, that answered the question. No, thank you, Lee. I really appreciate it. Now, who's your ideal buyer? Who's the core buyer? Is it CMO, revenue ops? Who buys your...
Yeah. Yeah. So it's usually within the marketing organization, but there would be, it's either within the marketing organization or the agency that services that marketing organization. And oftentimes they collaborate together. So the agency will be in the product as well as the marketer. And within the marketing organization, it would be, you know, the CMO is usually involved in the conversation, but in addition to the CMO, the people who oversee content, digital and performance marketing, as well as public relations. And core is also product marketing. So we have a lot of product marketing power users in our product. Because you can imagine that all the context of, like, you're going across all these different models and you have all these answers about how you're positioned within certain questions and categories and how are you positioned against your competitors. It's a wealth of information for context, for research and product development.
And how do you measure success for early customers?
Increases in visibility and citations, as well as, so basically, how often are they mentioned? And then is that actually translating to revenue through either referral traffic or increases in direct traffic, and how that relates to revenue impact?
How big is Brandy AI? How big is it? Employee wise.
We're growing really fast. So today, I mean, it's changing. We're bringing people on every day. So right now we're around the 25, 27 person spot with intent to hire additional folks very shortly.
And so what is your strategy to build talents in a market where AI skills and brand strategy expertise are pretty much rare? Are you finding people, or? You build them, train them. How does that work?
So basically we have a combination of great engineers. Obviously we're a software company. So the engineering side, our CTO and his team is pretty well schooled in AI code development and how the models work. But in addition to that, you know, it is really about finding just smart people who are incredibly curious to learn. And so in order to do that, we do a variety of testing and things like that to see about how smart folks are and see what they're passionate about and if they have, you know, shared values with what we're doing. In addition, though, beyond engineering, you know, we have domain experts on staff. So you can imagine this early market, things are changing so incredibly quickly.
Because I'm assuming you're serving various domains, right, Leah?
Yeah, like marketing, content, SEO. So people like that who are contributing to the product. And models change, right? So you have to have an infrastructure where you can test how is this changing the data before you switch them over to like the next rev of the model. So there's a lot of testing. We also have data people, lots of data analytics and people that are looking at the data. That is helping us to improve the product, like what is working, what is not working, how do we codify that in the product? And then, of course, we do have a variety of marketing and sales folks. And we utilize some third parties as well, who we feel are part of our team, who are helping us scale outside too.
No, if the conversation comes up about recruiting, I work with an agency out of Dublin I'd be happy to introduce you to.
Oh, I would love that. That would be
global,
great.
They have a lot of skills and talents to recruit, find, and sustain people. Very unique model. I'll have a conversation with you outside of that.
That sounds great. Thank you. Yeah.
And
It is a bit of a challenge, right, to find really smart people who are curious, but we've been lucky enough that we've been able to do that so far.
One of, you know, this channel that I've been recording the podcast on and podcasting on is the localization, which means language, which means translation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm assuming your customers not just doing business with you for content that is only in English. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So we support today 18 different languages, and we have agencies all over the world. So one of our core go-to-markets is through our agency partner program. And so those folks have worked with us to ensure that the language that we can support, you know, all over the world. So it's pretty exciting. So, you know, we support like Czech, Mandarin, Japanese, I mean, all different types of languages. And so they've been great partners with that. The product does work to optimize and local for those. It doesn't translate. The content has to be in that language, but it will optimize in any of those languages. But one of the things, Robin, you might find is interesting about this is that we're doing a ton of research with, because we have multiple different languages in the product, is how does the AI different languages or different sources and then bring it back? So for example, if I'm, you know, there's a difference between I'm doing a search in Madrid in Spanish versus I'm doing a search in Mexico City in Spanish. And then what are the differences of where that content is cited? And is it in Spanish? Is it in English? Is it a combination of each? And that with the research we've done, we see differences across all the different models and what those percentages are. But what's interesting, and this is going to be a major shift in marketing for global brands, is, you know, a lot of global brands, they don't necessarily publish content in multiple different languages. Some of them do, but not all of them. And it used to, especially for B2B companies, they don't normally overly localize from what we've seen. But now is a whole new world where if you are selling in France and you're a big, large semiconductor company and France or is like a big focus for you, you better have content in French that can be, you know, read, cited in French, because it's much more likely that it's going to be, the answer will be delivered and it will cite things that are in that language in order to do so.
Wonderful. One of the things in the language industry, it's always been, connecting demographics together, not for commercial reason, but for many other reasons other than just commercial, which that's why I asked the question. A lot of our audience is from the localization industry. A lot of audience, they are from outside the localization industry, but it's an important piece. And I had to ask the question on languages. Now, looking, you know, through the hourglass, I guess, down the road 6 months from now, what indicators will tell you that AI discovery paradigm has matured?
Well, that's a great question. I think it'll probably be user adoption numbers. It'll be when Google pushes everybody into AI mode or the majority of their users. It'll also be how do ads play within the paradigm of delivering search results. So we know that, you know, ChatGPT is testing this right now, and they've talked a lot about advertising revenue. We don't know what Google's going to do yet, really. That is going to be a sign that once you start to see conversion traffic come from pay-per-click within, or I don't know what they're going to call it that, but basically pay-per-click within the ad experience, in the AI experience, what does that look like? And are those adoption numbers, is traffic coming more from those versus like, what does it look like compared to historical data, stuff like that. So I think that'll be a major indicator. Those will be major indicators.
And where do you see the biggest opportunity right now, Leah, in the ecosystem, developing geo-platforms, data partners, agency consultancy? You must have like some sort of an ecosystem around that.
Yeah. So I'd say agency partners right now for us, because just like in any early market, when it comes to marketing, there's agencies do it. They're doing all the innovative things every day, like the good ones are, right? So they're living and breathing it. Like when I ran an agency, you know, and we had a big PR side, you know, I would always say to clients, like, if you need to outsource something, don't outsource PR, because they do it every day, right? Like they're in it every day, seeing, you know, they're addicted to the media. They're looking at who shifted here, who shifted there. They're kind of got their pulse on it. So, you know, that's just one example. But like back in the day when SEO was brand new on the scene, like agencies were popping up everywhere and they were, you know, making a ton of money because they were the trusted advisor and like that overlay, right? To provide that guidance and consulting to what they could possibly do, what these brands could do to figure out that new market. So I think agencies are going to be super important. And the ones that are truly passionate about it and get it or intellectually curious about it, those will be ones who will, you know, help with the growth and adoption of the GEO platforms. But you also talked about data, and I think the integration specifically of like consumer data with large CPG type companies is going to be really interesting to how you slice and dice and provide that overlay, as well as how can you report on specific personas. So this persona, you know, the person who wants to buy that ergonomic pen, that persona overlay by using consumer data and additional research, I think will help to eventually lead to closing the attribution loop, as well as like the historical context of how it's changed over time. And how does that, can you look at that as how it used to be with your SEO over the past, you know, couple of years.
Terrific. Now, did I miss anything that you wish I would have asked for, but I didn't ask? Did I miss any question? Do you think there's another area that we should know that we probably did not explore?
No, Robin, you're pretty pretty complete. I appreciate it. I guess it's just, you know, it's a, I guess one thing to explore is, you know, there's some hesitation and fear around AI. I don't know how you feel about that or how your audience feels about it. And we could talk about that.
Yeah, we just talked about it actually on another call. Everyday conversation is hesitation. Yeah. It's so obvious now to my podcast listeners. I talk about it on every podcast.
Okay.
It's very real, the hesitation. And I was just talking about it early on another call where I compared it to, you know, the first adoption was, you know, when somebody walked into somebody and says, hey, I'm going to hand you a plastic card. You're going to put it into a box and that box is going to give you money. And people freaked out over that. I mean, what do you mean? Am I going to get money out of an ATM? Now we call it an ATM machine. Back then, there was, I don't know if they called it an ATM machine or something else. I have no idea. But that adoption, it took long. And now I'm noticing we advance as a humanity, as society, the adoption is getting accelerated, but the hesitation is still there. And the earlier conversation I had, we concluded that the hesitation is stemming from a couple of things. One, job security. People are afraid if I use AI, I'm going to lose my job. And the second thing is trust. Huge amount of trust gap. Maybe the technology is still at its infancy right now. Maybe technology hasn't matured, which I think it isn't yet. We're getting there. We have some work to do. And we're solving that with, you know, putting MCP servers, which we were talking, that's the conversation we had earlier this morning as well. We talked about MCP servers where you put guardrails around what AI can do and how can it interact with systems and without really letting it loose on any topic, any data out there. Yeah, I feel like trust and the hesitation around AI is big. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so, you know, the kind of things that you're talking about are more kind of internal facing of how people are utilizing it maybe for their work. So, and then our lives here at Brandy are focused externally with how people trust the usage of it through buyer research and discovery and purchase decisions, except for the first thing that you talked about around people worrying about their jobs, right? So marketers specifically, you know, were very scared and frightened, like, how is AI going to take my job away? So we're actually seeing that our customers who are marketers are pretty excited about using Brandy. I think they're excited about it for a couple reasons, which actually elevate marketers and creatives. One is we don't use AI writing to, you know, get rid of people. But that's not just because we care about people not losing their jobs. It's also because, you know, just fundamentally as a business decision, it's better to have humans creating these things. The other thing that's really cool is that in some industries, marketing's kind of never been elevated in the same way as some of the other organizations within the company. And a lot of times, marketers can kind of feel like, you know, sales is pointing at them, marketing's pointing at them, and like they're fighting, right? What's kind of cool about GEO and this new AI visibility search is that it's providing new KPIs that marketing can report on that they've never been able to report on before that demonstrate value and impact of the work they're doing. So it actually, that's something that's getting them really excited. like, for example, PR pros and such, right? They could never report on, like, a lot of it was, you know, okay, media value, publicity value, this kind of thing. And now they're actually saying, look, we secured this coverage for you, or you were perceived in this manner from a sentiment in a negative way. And now we did this, and we can prove to you that the work we did affected that. And it's driving mentions, and it's driving leadership in the space. That is incredibly disruptive to the marketing industry. And it's a good thing. So it actually creates more job security. So that's kind of some of the stuff we're seeing.
You know, the consumer side, I think this is where you're talking about, but the business users, you're right, you know, talk about job security and stuff that's mostly internal and business users. It's for a lot of people on the consumer side, they're using it like to modify their pictures and do fun stuff. But you're right, there is a bit of a trust issue there on the consumer side. Now, I'm cognizant of time too, and you have a call coming up, and I do have a call coming up. Hopefully this podcast was helpful to you.
Very much. No, it was great. Thank you so much, Robin, for having me on. I really appreciate it and would love any feedback from your listening base too. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear what you thought about the podcast and just really appreciate the opportunity to get to know you a bit, Robin, and chat with you about this.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you for being a guest on the show today. I really appreciate it. Thanks for contributing to the conversation, to the audience. I want to thank you so much for listening in. If you're coming in on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming in on any streaming platform, thanks for downloading our episodes. We're approaching 1,500 downloads per day now. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. 2.5 million views overall across 49 countries on a 7-day interval. Thanks so much again for making us the top 5 a conversational podcast around the world. And I'll see you guys at the next episode. Be a stick around for 1 second.